This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Pathic, meaning that the cause is not known.
But a lot of people think it has an autoimmune component potentially,
yes,
at this point.
There are many unknown factors or a combination of factors that appear to trigger the body's immune system to produce an inflammatory reaction in the intestinal tract that continues without control and that results in inflammation of the intestinal wall and damage that leads to diarrhea and abdominal pain that is unbearable and intolerable.
And it does, for people who have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, there are some long-term risks for their health as well, aren't there?
Right. There's a high percentage, there's a between 3 and 4% increased risk for colorectal cancers. In children, there are very serious growth development issues in the Crohn's disease. And dangers that can cause hospitalization in those cases that are uncontrolled.
And in conventional medicine, at this point, as you mentioned, they're not considered to have a known cause. So, from a naturopathic perspective, what are some of the theories around cause for the inflammatory bowel diseases, if there are theories?
Well, I think the theories of cause really are not specific to naturopathic medicine, because conventional medicine and research has isolated suspected causes, which and all the drug therapies are oriented around addressing those causes. There is no known cause, but there appears to be a dysbiosis or an abnormal gut flora that triggers an immune response. That's one of the areas where research is really focused, although they haven't been able to nail down exactly what that disruption is. It's not predictable in any way, which is the same reason why, you know, the use of probiotics, whether they're going to help inflammatory bowel disease, is not predictable.
Well, that's interesting. You started with dysbiosis, an imbalance of gut bacteria, because I was just curious what some of the more cutting-edge conventional treatments were these days. And I went to inflammatory bowel disease on Wikipedia, and much of it is focused on that, actually. There's studies on fecal transplantation. There's studies now on probiotics and even on worm therapy for people who have these diseases. So there obviously, it seems like the conventional community is really focused also, like the naturopathic community, on the imbalances going on in the gut ecology.
Absolutely. I mean, traditionally, antibiotics. Well, antibiotics are an attempt to get rid of large populations of abnormal bacteria or antifungal medications or antiparasitic. So we have one area of conventional treatment, which is to kill abnormal flora. They're coming on board. Many conventional gastroenterologists are prescribing probiotics now because there are a significant number of cases that improve with them. Fecal transplant is really still considered an alternative therapy. There's a couple of good studies that are showing that by transplanting feces from a, quote, healthy patient into the colon of a patient suffering from inflammatory bowel disease, that can re-inoculate, as it were, the abnormal terrain of flora in a patient. And it's showing that there is some rebalancing that seems to lead to good outcomes.
So at your clinic, you've decided to develop a program for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. What has inspired you specifically to target a program to this community of patients? Is there something unique about this cluster of illnesses that you felt like it needed a program to lead people through it?
I think early treatment. If you go to my website at pearlnaturalhealth.com, you read the story of of Julia and her son. Julia now works for us as an occupational therapist, treating and helping implement a specific diet for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease patients. But my early success with her son's case and subsequent patients who came from traditional gastroenterology settings, hopeless, that there was nothing else to be done when the amino salicylates and the biologics and the steroids weren't working. Because that is, you know, we have a significant number of cases where conventional treatment simply does not address, doesn't work. I mean, there certainly are significant number of cases that are well treated in conventional therapies. But my being able to help these folks who were hopeless with the treatments that we offered in our program in our naturopathic medicine led me to develop a whole program to serve this population. And because we get so many patients with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease who aren't getting anywhere with their conventional therapy.
Before we talk about some of the details of what you do with these patients, what are some of the downsides of the conventional treatment? I know that they're used mostly as for management of symptoms and reduction of inflammation, but also they tend to have some concerns long term that even the conventional doctors on some of the medications like prednisone don't want people on them for long periods of time if possible.
Well, the downside is that steroids are very damaging, using them long term, and we have so many cases coming our way where that's all that's working. Of course, there are a number of cases where it's not working anymore, where people on high-dose prednisone aren't having control of the inflammation. But it's absolutely unsustainable to stay on these kinds of doses of prednisone long-term, 40 to 60 milligrams. The amino salicylates, the drugs like acicol and pentasa, they don't seem to have a lot of terrible side effects. When they work, it's a good medical solution. The biologics, which are being used now, drugs like Remicade and Humira, have some, you know, risks for lymphoma and Lyme disease-like illness that scares a lot of patients, and patients would rather get off of them. And the immunomodulators or the immunosuppressants like azathioprine, which it seems like everybody who comes in is on, we're suppressing the immune system, which has, when they work, it's great for the symptoms and for the mucosal lining, but we're also suppressing the entire immune system, which leaves people vulnerable to other kinds of illnesses. So,
do you have a sense? Have you seen enough people where you have a sense whether you're getting better outcomes when people are doing both conventional and natural treatments together, or doing just the naturopathic treatments?
I don't suggest that people, I think when people utilize both wings of medicine in this particular disease, that it's a good idea and a smart idea. I have certainly positioned my practice in such a way that I'm working with gastroenterologists, and we're not trying to necessarily replace therapy based on a philosophical principle. We're wanting to complement. And when we can provide an alternative, the open-minded gastroenterologists are the first to admit that if this works better, let's do it exclusively. I think in the average case, we're doing both medicines, and as healing proceeds apace, we're able to successfully taper many of the medications that are being used. We also, you know, just because symptoms are relieved with any approach, we also want to make sure with follow-up colonoscopies and studies that actually symptoms aren't just better, but the surfaces of the intestine are actually healing, because we really want to make sure there's no conversion to cancers later on.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking today with Dr. Gary Weiner about natural approaches to ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. So let's you mentioned diet, and I'm sure diet is a cornerstone of some of the program that you put people through. What is the diet that or diets that you tend to lead people towards who are suffering from inflammatory bowel disease?
Well, first and foremost, in any natural treatment plan for these diseases, implementation of a dietary strategy is paramount. The hardest diet, but also the one that seems to be the most successful, is referred to as the specific carbohydrate diet, SCD. And that's a diet that was popularized through an author, Elaine Gotchel.
She's actually been on Health Watch.
Has she?
Many years ago.
And I think she, and a book called Breaking the Vicious Cycle. And it's a grain-free diet that is does not include refined carbohydrates and sugars from conventional sources, with the exception of honey. And, you know, it's really very close to the Paleolithic diet that's very popular right now, which is a grain-free diet. It is very far and apart, far and distant from the conventional American diet. So for patients who are coming off of standard American eating, it is difficult. But it is also, we've got a good study out of the University of Massachusetts now, where most of the participants in the study improved greatly with the diet that's worth your listeners looking at. That's what we lead people to.
And this woman, I believe she was a biochemist, and it's interesting about the book is it seems like it's, even though the diet's very hard to do, it seems like reading the book is nice because it it's very clear the mechanism of what she's proposing as a dietary strategy. But it's also interesting because it seems like some things are included that you wouldn't think would be included and other things aren't because of she's looking at double molecule sugars as being culprits versus single molecule sugars. So like the monosaccharides are okay to eat and the disaccharides are not okay to eat, which sort of leads to some strange things you don't see in other diets.
And, you know, it actually, if you read my story on my website of how I came to treat so many people, I write about how it really, this diet slapped everything I had learned in medical school in the face. Where, you know, the diet's very high in animal foods, cultured dairy products and meat, which you and I were taught initially that in inflammatory diseases we want to stay away from arachidonic acid and sources of animal fat and as well as, you know, dairy products, which in this diet we have resolution of disease with people focusing on a diet of vegetables, cultured dairy products, and animal fat and food.
So what do you do with people coming in who are vegetarian? I would imagine that would be a challenging.
It's a challenge. We do our best to still remove grain carbohydrate and these sugars that are incriminated. And, you know, the mechanism of the diet, in theory, is, of course, to treat the dysbiosis. To treat the abnormal flora by starving them selectively of the sugars that they require to reproduce.
And so what are there some specific tests that a naturopath does that you wouldn't get from your conventional doctor in terms of analyzing what a person's gut ecology is like or otherwise looking at clues on how to individualize treatment?
I think compared to what's going on in the gastroenterology offices, probably we do more in-depth studies, more complex stool analyses to determine, and breath tests, the small intestine bowel overgrowth tests, and stool tests to determine, you know, the degree of normal flora and abnormal flora. I think you'll see gastroenterologists moving more in this direction over time. If there is any small intestinal bowel overgrowth, we want to treat it. If there is any abnormal flora that we can recover in the large intestine, we want to treat it. And we also do some other kinds of testing, such as looking at the adrenal sufficiency or insufficiency, the adrenal gland hormones, cortisol and DHEA. We look at intestinal permeability factors to understand the degree to which there might be the so-called gut leaks that can be patched, as well as food allergy testing, because there is significant findings in some studies about the role of intestinal permeability in inflammatory bowel disease.
Did you see that article in the New York Times Magazine a week ago? There was a big profile on a woman whose child had juvenile arthritis and ended up going off of a whole bunch of foods. And the article discusses the intestinal permeability issue, which you don't see very often in the mainstream media.
There isn't a, if we look at the studies out there, if one does a search on PubMed or just looks at the most recent research, we can't find correlation between treatment of intestinal permeability, as naturopaths have always done it, and better outcomes. But what we can find is studies that show there's a high degree of permeability in patients with the disease. It's always something that we treat.
So give us an example. Say someone comes in, they have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, and you do some testing on them, and not only do they have bacterial imbalances, but they have leaky gut syndrome or increased intestinal permeability. What are some of the things that you would give to treat the intestinal permeability, since that's not even entirely recognized as something to treat in conventional medicine at this juncture?
Well, the core strategy in treating intestinal permeability is what we do with the dietary strategy, which is finding the so-called safe list. The hardest thing for an IBD patient, intestinal inflammatory bowel disease patient, to do is to go through this laborious process of finding what foods calm the disease down versus what foods aggravate it. And so that's the key to treating intestinal permeability, because when immunologic activity, when an over-aggravated immune system calms down, that's the treatment. That's the key treatment. Now, there's you know, some benefit from giving gamma arisinol and glutamine and other supplements like that to repair intestinal permeability. But I'll tell you, the most difficult thing with inflammatory bowel disease, and any of your listeners who are suffering from this know what I'm saying, is that supplements and lots of things orally are difficult often to tolerate. And in fact, you know, before we start recommending, you know, take 20 supplements for your inflammatory bowel disease, we have to understand that one has to be very, very careful with what one takes. And the binders and fillers in your common supplements are a big problem. And, you know, certain companies are better and cleaner. We have to be real careful.
And what are some of the other supplements you might have near the top of your list? You mentioned some for permeability, and you mentioned probiotics is something that would certainly be part of it. Are there any herbs that show up that you might consider using, anti-inflammatory herbs or other supplements, or not so much?
Not so much. Well, you know, curcumin sometimes plays a role. We're usually not doing one thing at a time, and so it's difficult, you know, to those kind of double-blind placebo-controlled studies where we have, 100 sufferers, and we give 50 of them turmeric and the other a placebo, and that's all we're doing, so we
sure.
can really... It doesn't happen. I think, you know, certainly treating the whole of digestion is important in inflammatory bowel disease, so that from top to bottom, meaning if we find a problem with digestion at the level of the stomach, then, you know, hydrochloric acid can be helpful. I have cases where giving hydrochloric acid was the key to turning the case around and getting the medications to work and then ultimately getting a patient off. Why is that? Because by adding the acid that was missing, the digested food at the level of the stomach entered the intestinal tract, the small intestine and then later the large intestine, more properly digested and thus causing less autoimmune activity. At least that would be my proposed mechanism of what was going on. Digestive enzymes can be very helpful.
And again, I would guess with your testing that not every person who came in would need or it would be appropriate to give hydrochloric acid, for instance.
We give do a full study of both stomach, small intestine, and large intestine. Something else that's promising, David, is the use of low-dose naltrexone. I don't know if you've done a show on that yet, which is a drug that's compounded by a compounding pharmacist, often prescribed by naturopathic doctors or holistic medical doctors, which seems to regulate the immune system in various autoimmune diseases in a favorable way to these patients. We're seeing real improvements with a lot of our patients, starting them on a regimen of low-dose naltrexone. You asked what else we give in terms of supplements, and I think looking at nutritional insufficiencies and deficiencies, there's some good studies on low vitamin D and susceptibility to relapses in ulcerative colitis. And we got to take a close look at what patients aren't absorbing. This is especially true in Crohn's disease, where the small intestine is involved. Ulcerative colitis is supposed to be really isolated to the large intestine, but we're seeing a lot of indeterminate colitis, which is this kind of hybrid mix where it's just not clear how much of the small intestine and the large intestine is there. If the very mechanism is inflamed, the intestine, which is what absorbs our nutrition from food, if that is impaired, then the blood that arrives at the intestine with the nutrients that are needed to heal the intestine, because an intestine that is damaged, ulcerated, inflamed, really requires a nutrient-rich blood, then we've got to make sure that the net nutrition is getting in. Sometimes intravenous treatments are the only way to go in the beginning of treatment to deliver vitamins and nutrients to the body so that the nutrient-rich blood can read the intestine. I hope we're not grossing your patients out this morning with all the use of these words.
Well, I was curious, actually, how receptive the gastroenterologists you're working with are, both with using the specific carbohydrate diet, which is definitely not a mainstream diet, and some of these less conventional testing protocols, and then treating off of these results. Do you get some pushback and some skepticism from the GI doctors you're working with, or are they mostly curious and collaborative with you?
Well, the ones that I work with regularly, and in fact, some of them actually send patients for collaborative treatment, are open when they see increasingly that their patients do better and on their medications, or they're able to use less of them. There are decreased flares and more patients in symptomatic remission. I'm on the medical advisory committee of the Northwest Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, and I have an opportunity to speak at events that the foundation sponsors, and actually gastroenterologists are often present. And I have a nice working relationship with many of them. And the ones that are skeptical, if we look at their research in the mainstream journals, they are quite clear increasingly, and if we look at citations from the year 2012-13, that diet seems to play a role. It's just that nobody can put their finger on it. And I would say to your listeners, too, that even though we have specific strategies, it's not the same strategy for every patient. We have patients who don't do something as rigorous as Elaine Gottschall's specific carbohydrate diet that are still in symptomatic remission. There are patients who do various kinds of diets. All of them are better than the standard American diet. Some of them have more or less grain, more or less refined carbohydrate. I think the key is, for a patient to understand that diet does matter, despite what they may have been told by some professionals. Even the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, in their literature, is now saying diet appears to matter in the manifestation. I think it's not a cure.
Let's try to squeeze in one call before the end of the half hour. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air with Dr. Gary Weiner.
Hi, my name is Tim.
Hi, Tim. We just have a couple minutes, so if you could keep your question brief.
Well, basically, in listening to this program this morning, I have been dealing with my wife's inflammatory bowel disease for the past 5 years. And we've gone way beyond anything that you've discussed this morning. And she was scoped last December, and her GI doctor indicated that she was in remission. There was no sign of any ulcers at all. But that doesn't answer the question about diarrhea or recurring problems with low-grade fevers. She also has interstitial cystitis. And
do you have a question, Tim? Because our show's about to wrap up.
Yeah, I wanted to know about the relationship, if there is any, in this region with those two diseases, because they're both considered autoimmune diseases.
Thank you for the call. We'll take the answer off the air. Gary, we only have a couple minutes, but do you know of any connection between interstitial cystitis and inflammatory bowel disease off the top of your head?
Well, interstitial cystitis is, symptoms of cystitis and bladder infection without any microbial, without any bacteria that can be isolated or cultured. So there are many, I'll say to the listener, there are many other causes of inflammation besides autoimmune aggression, and also bacteria, and that maybe the approach that they've taken for her disease has helped with the autoimmunity, but there are still many terrains to explore in terms of factors to control inflammation, looking at the adrenal, looking at other nutrient sufficiencies and deficiencies.
Well, we also know that if you have an autoimmune disease, you are at a higher risk for other autoimmune diseases, not necessarily those two. I don't know if those two are related, but certainly there are some. I know people with some autoimmune diseases have a higher risk for others. So let's finish the program by, if you have some contact information, maybe we have some listeners who might want to know more details about the program, how long it takes, and what it involves, and they could contact your clinic and
sure.
find out more.
I can be our clinic phone number at Pearl Natural Health is 503-230-8973, and you can find us on the web at www.pearlnaturalhealth.com. Go to the program tab to the complementary care for inflammatory bowel disease tab, and you'll find many pages describing the work that we do and the services in helping to implement the specific carbohydrate diet.
It was great having you back on Health Watch today, Dr. Weiner.
Thank you for having me.
We were talking today with Dr. Gary Weiner about natural approaches to ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Radio Zine.
KBOO is proud to sponsor two special Black History events at Portland State University on Thursday, February 21st, featuring East Coast MC, educator, and community organizer Hassan Salam. First is a multimedia presentation on the history of Black music titled From Spiritual to Hip Hop. This will take place at noon at the Smith Memorial Union on the second floor. The second event is a hip hop show with local progressive artists Sirens Echo, and March 4th. This will happen at 7 p.m. at the Food for Thought Cafe in the basement of Smith Memorial Union. That's two special events with Hassan Salam in celebration of Black History Month on Thursday, February 21st at Portland State University. More information can be found at kbu.fm/Hassan2013.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. The time is 11:31. Up next, Radio Zine host Don Merrill will be speaking with Hassan Salam, who we were just hearing about. He's an MC, poet, musician, and political activist about Black music, culture, culture, and activism.
talking with hip-hop poet, musician, and political activist Hassan Salam. Mr. Salam, thanks for talking with me. I wanted to start out by asking you, I was looking over some of your music, and I was looking at some of the activism that you're involved in. You're involved in a lot of activism. The first thing I wanted to ask you is, at what point did you realize that your hip-hop message is unique? Because, I mean, there are a lot of hip-hop artists. So what is it about the way that you create your beats or the way that you create your lyrics? What is it that made you believe that you had something special to say?
Honestly, I've been doing music since I was about 10 or 11 years old. And I got started because the older brothers on my block, I just wanted to hang out with the older heads. And I used to go outside when they were freestyle and try to jump in and freestyle. And they kind of were just like, you know, you have a different life. You've had different experiences. Even when I was younger, they were like, that's what you should rhyme about. That's what you should express, you know. And ever since then, even when I had stopped doing music for a long time, and one of my brothers, Dad Sport, he was doing a song about the police because someone had got killed by the police in Jersey, and he was like, "Yo, you're the only person I know who could do something on this song, right?" And since then, I just kept on with it, you know. So I mean, I think that I was just raised this way, and if it wasn't through music, I would be getting this message out in a different kind of way.
Right, and that sort of leads me to another question I had for you. So what was it that made you what made you politically aware? Was it the news? I mean, was it family? I mean, have you always had a taste for the political as well as the musical?
Ever since I was a kid, I was raised this way. I was raised by my mother. My mother, she marched with Dr. King. She was in the Peace Corps in Venezuela and Colombia. My grandmother, she was a teacher in the Philadelphia school system for like 30 years.